Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. This is the Dean Mackin Show on today's news talk, TNT Radio.
G'day and welcome to Thursday. I hope your day's been absolutely phenomenal. Thank you to Chris Smith. He'll be back tomorrow and lots to talk about today. I'll let you know who I'm chatting with. I'll be talking to Jeremy Beck in the not too distant future. Lots to talk about, especially what's happening over with nuclear sites that belong to the Russians and how they could be under threat. We just heard during the news, I mean, Germany, did you learn nothing in the Second World War? Germany, here they are wanting war, apparently, with Russia. I don't recall that panning out too well, not that long ago, if you were only several decades ago, and they didn't do too well. And here they are, you know, poking the bear, and it's not going to end well. It's not going to be a good outcome for anybody in that particular fight, but there they are doing it again at the behest of their globalist masters. And I would suggest that nobody, none of the civilians in Germany would want war with Russia or anybody else. And they can't afford it. They are broke. They can literally power their or heat their own homes at the moment. The farmers are doing a terrific job over there and kicking off that all across the EU, those protests. But the German government, what are you doing, German people? Why are you still voting that lot of creeps in? Because they have ruined your country and they shall continue to do it until you wake up. Also, I'll be talking to a little bit later, Paul McGowan, who I know you all love over in the UK. He has no filter whatsoever, and that's why I love him. Whatever he thinks, he says, and I think that is about as honest as anyone can get, and he's always on point too, which is an added bonus. Now, newly elected Rochdale MP, George Galloway, he's not mucking about. He's waking up at a rate of knots. Yes, I know he fell for the COVID narrative. I know a few people did, but he's waking up. He's waking up very quickly. He's on the right side of the Gaza conflict. And certainly he's going back. He's delving back into the archives and waking up to some things that happened in history. He was on the Richard Gage's Twitter feed. He had a video interview with Richard Gage shared again recently. And he questions George Galloway, questions aspects of 9/11, and so you should. I remember having a debate with somebody who thought they were the king of radio in Australia, didn't want to talk to me about my Senate run, instead wanted to ask me about 9/11. I suggested that, you know, they probably didn't want to have a debate with me, and asked, when asked how many buildings fell down in New York City that day, quickly responded, two, and I corrected them and said, no, it was 3, 1, 2, and 7, and maybe we should end that there so I don't embarrass them anymore. And anyone that thinks it's okay for a building to fall within its own footprint, a building that didn't even get hit by anything and that only burned for a few hours, never before in history has that happened. Never again shall it happen, unless, of course, there are explosives planted in that building. And I would suggest, and many would probably agree, the plane that landed in the field was probably intended to hit World Trade Center Building 7, and it didn't. And that caused a bit of a problem. Those things obviously not remotely detonated, but on a timer, one might imagine. And of course, Richard Gage and hundreds and thousands of engineers and architects, including our own one, Mr. Jeremy Beck, has grave concerns about what happened on that particular day. It's just absolutely beyond reason that an inquiry has not found into that, that there are many, many questions that still need answering. And World Trade Center Building 7, most people don't know about it because if they did, they would start asking questions. And it was something almost covered up, if you will, by the mainstream media. And it's something that I would suggest MP George Galloway isn't going to let go of, and shall indeed keep pushing that. And I hope he does push that narrative, because that may lead him to wake up further. He used to be a little bit of a lefty, and he's coming across to our side of the fence. And we think that is phenomenal. Albo. I'll quote him today. Congratulations to Penny Wong on becoming the longest serving female cabinet member, minister in Australian history. And many people, myself included, asking, okay, she's been around a long time, but what has she achieved? What has she actually done? Give me a list of terrific things that all Australians would agree have been remarkable. And, you know, I mean, I won't be, you know, I will think one thing. She has kind of fixed a little bit, but then again, anybody could have done this. Anybody with an inkling of common sense fixed our relationship with China a little bit after the Liberal Party broke it. But that's what they do. One lot breaks it, the other lot fixes it, and then they just continue that yin and yang thing. You know, they're working together, but they pretend to be apart. So most people still not waking up to that. We are here at TNT, all of you listening and watching are as well. Now, being racist, apparently we all know it's one-way traffic on that street. You know, if a white sportswoman called a black cop a stupid black bastard, it would end the career, the reputation of that person. But apparently racism, it's colorblind, because Sam Kerr, allegedly her slur to the police has recently revealed that it's okay to call someone the equivalent if they're white. And it's totally racist, totally wrong, was covered up for 2 years, and she should get her marching orders. But news.com.au would have you believe that she's got a tremendous amount of support amongst all. In fact, they said all, not most, all the fans. Well, none of the fans that I know are supporting her. They want her out. And if you get onto Twitter and X.com, I should say, Facebook and whatnot, she's not very popular. So news.com.au, again, misinformation, disinformation, check. Just tune them out wherever you can. And, of course, there was that horrific, only a couple of days, that horrific attack by some African teenagers on a 14-year-old autistic white girl. These are Africans. Luckily, they've since been identified, but not one news outlet identified that as a hate crime. And I guarantee you, and you know it, that if that situation was reversed, it would have been all over, over everywhere. It would have been, I mean, this was covered well, blurred faces and whatnot, but it didn't get, you know, treated as a hate crime, just an incident between some young people, basically. But good news is those people have been arrested, identified as a result of the unblurred video that some people did share. Good on you for doing that. And those people may get a slap on the wrist. I doubt that will even happen, but we'll find out. And, of course, major heating manufacturer Sealy International, going the way of the dodo, they've had to shut down one of their factories in Albury. And this is after the Labor government actually gave them an incentive to start it up in the first place years ago. And now they're closing it down. And you're going to love it. Why are they closing it down? Because of the whole renewable thing. And I've got a quote here from Mr. Sealy himself. Said, a transition away from gas is needed, but should be done in a more sustainable way. This is from the guy, Mr. Sealy himself. Mr. Sealy, wow, you're playing into a narrative that shall be the beginning of your own demise. It's kind of like writing your own funeral song and advocating for it, isn't it? It really is just absolutely horrific. But anyway, that's what people do. That's what they do. Probably some more government grants for Mr. Sealy if he plays that tune. But again, plenty of gas. Gas isn't the bad guy. And of course, people are being told to use their air conditioners instead, as well as plug in their EVs. Wow, you can imagine we're going to see the power wires, you know, the transmission wires in the street glowing orange at night as they barely cope. It's absolutely crazy. Now, for a complete list of shows and our schedule offered here at TNT, simply visit the website at tntradio.live. We serve up the latest live news and current affairs presented by a host of credible and expert commentators who can separate fact from fiction, truth from propaganda. And that happens right here as we keep you in the loop at TNT.
Going 360 on the headlines.
It's really well-balanced conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
G'day, Gemma. I just looked at the clock. I stole a couple of minutes of your time. I do apologise. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Don't worry about that. You know, you're in full flow. It's fine. It's your show, Dean. But it's interesting you're talking about the Sealy guy, you know, architect of his own demise, because this morning here in the UK, as a reaction to yesterday's budget, I think something else that's in demise without a doubt, and I think that Jeremy Hunt, our Chancellor, is absolutely the architect of it in this instance, it is the UK pub industry. A shocking number of pubs have closed in the last couple of years. We're talking, you know, 25% of pubs in the UK. And the pubs here, I reckon, much like Australia, you know, it's part of the fabric of society. It is, we're famous for it. We're famous for our pubs. You know, you can't beat an old English pub. But unfortunately, the budget has gone down like a pint of cold vomit, really, with the publicans, many saying that by the end of the month, they will have to close their doors. There was a big fuss about the freeze on duty on some alcohol, not all. Publicans are saying, and landlords and campaign groups are saying, it just doesn't go far enough. Freezing duty on beer alone is not enough. Spiraling wages, VAT, tax on other areas of the industry are making it completely unsustainable. And many are closing their doors. And there are calls this morning for Jeremy Hunt, our Chancellor, to be banned from every single pub in the UK as a result of what he didn't do for the industry, the hospitality industry yesterday. Many eyes on him thought that he would do a lot more. And just to give you an indication of the scale of this issue, we had 60,000 pubs in the UK still open after the scamdemic in 2022. 60,000 were still open. At the end of 2023, we only had 45,000. That's a closure of 15,000. That's 25% of all pubs had gone in a year. In a year. Now, you know, one of the things that the last 4 years taught us was they don't want, politicians didn't really, despite Eat Out to Help Out here in the UK, they didn't really want people getting together in social areas. And pubs were really the focus of a lot of COVID-related propaganda, you know, that COVID was waiting outside the door of a pub at 10 o'clock. And if you left 1 minute past 10, he was going to get you, you know? It was this whole scaremongering around pubs. It seems that that may not have worked, that kind of messaging of people getting together in pubs. So now they're going in on an economic angle. Anything they could have done yesterday, the government, the budget, to help the pub industry, which has struggled since 2020, they haven't done. And many saying they will close their doors by the end of the month. One landlady said, you know, I'll have to quote her, this is not my word, she said the tax and the budget was bullshit for pubs. She's closing her doors with the loss of nearly 100 jobs at her pub, including part-time staff, and also her home, because so many publicans, they live in the building, and it's like they get that with the job. So they've got to find somewhere to live. So the knock-on effect for the economy, you've got people that are unemployed, people looking for houses, we've got a housing shortage. It really is quite astounding that not more was done for the hospitality industry. And many are saying it's the death knell for pubs in the UK. And that is, if you live here, you understand how massive that is. And I have covered this story before. We're looking at 29 pubs a week are closing, just those statistics there, from 60,000 to 45,000 in a year. It does rather spell the end of the beleaguered British pub. And that is a real big hit to our culture, to the fabric of the UK, to the way we socialise, to the way we get together. And it feeds into that globalist narrative of just staying at home, staring at a screen, maybe with your glass of wine or your can of lager in your hand, but not getting together with other human beings. Seems to be the way we're going in every aspect of our society, shopping, socialising, dating, and now the pub. It's a nail in the coffin this morning as we head into the weekend. I myself, as a protest vote, will be going to a pub this weekend just to show my support for the industry. It's a sad, sad day here in the UK, Dean.
Well, I've got a few things to take away from that. One of the few situations where we're not in lockstep, very different here in Australia with pubs and clubs. I think that's because of poker machines. But the other thing as well, I work in pubs and clubs several nights a week, you know, doing entertainment and whatnot. And I get free alcohol there. And I think it's terrific that I do. And the alcohol is quite cheap. It's quite affordable. But the simple fact is those places draw big crowds because they have poker machines and they make a fortune. I spoke to a friend of mine, ex-federal police officer, bought a club not that many years ago, probably 15 years ago, a pub, for only a few million dollars down in Gosford. It would now be worth probably 10 times that, because now a pub in Australia is basically a mini casino. Most of the people just straight into the poker machine room. Of course, you can't smoke in the pub, but of course, there's always a part of the pub where they have poker machines where you can smoke. So exceptions, but they make an absolute fortune out of those. The other thing that worried me as well with what you said, with people just going and having a drink at home. I mean, for me, back in my 30s, I thought I was starting to drink too much when I was going out three nights a week at a rather big company with 30 employees and whatnot. And it was very easy for me to stop drinking because I never drank at home. I only ever drank at the pub. So I just stopped going to the pub, problem fixed. But if you start to drink at home and you associate, and it is, any addiction is an association, and you therefore associate drinking with at home and that gets out of control, well, you can't stop going home. So again, getting people who have that option, who only trust themselves to drink at the pub, could cause some sort of epidemic of alcoholism moving forward. And that is based on pretty sound psychological evidence over time.
Well, yeah, that's a very good point to make, because there are no checks and balances at home, are there? There's no one to call time. There's no one to say, I think you've had enough, mate. There's no one to escort you out and make sure you get home safely. It's a very different environment. I know many people like yourself, Dean, actually, many men, actually, who do take that approach. They only drink at the pub. They see it as a treat. It's socializing. It's a pressure valve. Yep. The pub is a pressure valve for a lot of people. You can really let off steam. It's a different way of interacting with the world. And they're going. They're going, no doubt about that. 60,000 2022, 45,000 2023. And many publicans this morning quoted as saying at least 600 this year if it carries on the rate it's going. I'd say probably more. They just cannot meet the cost, and the profit margins are too small. Well, why would you run a business if you're not making any money? It doesn't make any sense. And it's a stressful industry. Unsocial hours, you're dealing with drunk people, all of that stuff.
And Jim, I forgot to ask, so what is the situation with gambling, poker machines, et cetera, in the pubs in the UK? Are they allowed? Do they have them? Are they a big thing if they do?
We do have machines. I never pay any attention to them, actually. So we've got like fruit machines where you put your money in and you pull the thing down. Well, you don't pull the thing down anymore. Those days are gone, aren't they? That's showing my age. Push the button. That's right. Push the button. And quiz machines as well. They have a lot of quiz machines. They're very popular. Quizzing's massively popular in the UK. Pub quizzes. They're huge. They'll be gone too. It's really sad. In terms of actual gambling, I don't think that is a thing. I'm pretty sure in pubs that, although fruit machines are effectively gambling, I don't think we have poker, but I could be wrong on that. I never have given them a second glance in my entire life. I head straight for the bar, Dean. That's my reason for going. So apologies for not being able to scratch on that.
Well, the things that you call fruit machines, we call them the pokies or the poker machines. Here, there's a band that wrote a song called Blow Up the Pokies, with dynamite. That would have been a terrific thing, because I've just seen this get bigger and bigger and people just piling in and coming out like zombies, going in a week's pay as they walk in and empty pockets as they walk out and have to walk home because they don't have enough for a cab. And I just see it happening here in Australia. It's a huge thing, these poker machines in pubs here, and the pubs are making an absolute fortune. The clubs are crazy. I've been to a couple of major clubs on the Central Coast here, and it's funny, during the day, primarily women, like literally 90% women over 60, and just there, row after row after row of them. I don't know what they're doing. I've had two mates had the sheriff knock on the door to kick them out of their own house because their wife falsified the signature on a mortgage to get a second mortgage to try and win back the money they'd lost without their husband finding out. And that is not uncommon here in Australia. It is really horrific, and it's the government who is behind all of this. So it's up to them to fix it, but they won't.
Wow, that is extraordinary. So when you say pokey, you mean the fruit machines. I thought you meant poker,
poker. We call them the pokies here, or the poker machines. But they push the buttons. I don't know how they haven't worn the fingerprints off their fingers. They're just in there tapping and tapping, and they only ever remember the wins, never the losses. That's the whole problem.
Wow, extraordinary. Yeah, well, gambling is an addiction like any other addiction. So I suppose if you're in a pub and you've got a pokey machine, as you would say, you've got a drink in one hand and you're poking the machine in the other, that's two addictions fueled right there. You know, if you could bring back smoking into UK pubs, you'd have three in one go. No wonder people, do like going, but it's unfortunate. People do like going to pubs. It's just that the publicans and the landlords and landladies, they can't make ends meet. And this budget has really put the death knell into the industry, which is surprising because many were just so hoping that he would do the right thing and bring back the British pub. But it seems the COVID legacy of, getting together and socialising in a boozer here, it's still alive and kicking. It's just economically being forced upon landlords now instead of, a propaganda message.
Yeah, it's really sad what's happening to the good old-fashioned pub in the UK, but I am glad that they're not being propped up by people putting their entire week's pay and their mortgages literally through those machines, as we have a massive problem here. Gemma Cooper, you'll be back in about 50 minutes' time to talk to the wonderful Sonia Poulton, and I look forward to our chat tomorrow here at TNT.
TNT's Tyler Nixon.
I think with the people behind her, the Never Trumpers and the money flowing in, whatever their end game is, it doesn't seem that she'll be dropping out even if she loses her own state, which kind of gives you a sense of the arrogance of power of people who back the Nikki Haley's of the world, where the popular support, popular consent doesn't really mean anything to them. They're gonna continue forward seeking that power putting themselves in the mix, regardless of how many spankings or smackdowns they get from the citizens, you know, from the electorate, who are obviously minor, you know, just a sort of a speed bump in the path and the quest for power.
Tyler Nixon on today's News Talk, TNT.
The Light is Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. The Light Paper. Not far right, just right so far. thelightpaper.co.uk.
TNTRadio.live.
Online.
Streaming.
Be a part of the conversation.
I stream it all at work, and I stream it to my phone and listen to it wherever I go.
TNT.
And welcome back to the program. Of course, if you ever do have something to say, something to add to what I'm saying, you can just call in 1-800-670-310. As Siv from Sydney, somebody who's been calling me for a long, long time, well over a decade on radio. G'day, Siv. How are you going?
Not bad. I like your impersonation of Juan Antonio Samaranch or whatever his avalanche or whatever his bloody name was. Oh, for God's sake, why do people have such long names? You need a bloody poster to put the names up. Oh wait, I can't talk. I've got a very long name myself. Yes. Look, I just very quickly just responding to Gemma's story about the pubs, and you know, it just got me thinking. We keep highlighting these stories and. Good, we must continue to do that. I have no problem with that. But I think now, if we're going to fight back, then we're going to have to find creative ways of doing it. So for this one, I thought, well, we've all got email networks. We've all got social media networks. Why don't we actually go and support these places en masse? If you see that there's something that's closing down, then get all your friends to go and gather and support these places. And if you get old mate Tedros dribbling on about we've got to go on to a plant-based diet to deal with bloody global boiling, then get the biggest piece of meat you can and start cooking it and put that on your social media feed or something. We've got to find creative ways of fighting back. There's more of us than there is of them. That's the point I'm making. There's more of us than there is of them.
Yeah, if only, Siv, if only we could get somebody to bring us all together to act as one, or if people could group think and do what's good for the group, that would be terrific. But of course, if we start eating those big T-bones, what the hell am I going to do with all those chocolate-coated crickets that I bought, Siv?
Well, never mind. There's more of them for you. I mean, you must know. But see, this is the thing, right? We keep highlighting these stories, and I have no problem with us doing that. We've got to do that. The more the merrier and all of that. But then we highlight the stories and we sort of let them go, oh, yeah, okay, good, right, yes. Tedros is at it again. Oh, yes, you know, all these politicians are dribbling on like they always do. Oh, great, now the budget's come out, they're just, you know, talking their usual rubbish. There is more of us than there is of them, and we've just got to get off our backsides, pull our proverbial fingers out of our wherevers, and actually do something about it. Otherwise, these things are going to keep happening. And if you want to get something done, you've got to do it en masse and you've got to do it creatively. Because the one thing I've noticed politicians hate, absolutely hate, is numbers that are bigger than theirs. Good to talk to you, Dean.
Good to talk to you, Siv. He says en masse, when we stopped going to mass, that was where we used to meet and exchange ideas when we had a singular religion in this country. And, of course, they demonise that, and we don't do that anymore either. Jeremy Beck is not just my producer and the producer of the Chris Smith Show here. He's a terrific fellow. He's got decades of experience in studying and writing about globalisation. He's covered related topics, including COVID-19, climate change alarmism, and the WEF. He likes to tell them to go and get weft as well. He's got a degree with honours in mechanical engineering and computing. Is a good fella, and we've got him with us today. Jeremy Beck, how are you going?
Yeah, good, Dean. Good to be here. And good to hear Siv there. He made some pretty good points, I thought.
Mate, he does. He's a terrific fella. He's sight impaired. He lives in Northwest Sydney, and I think he'd love to work in radio too. And I think he'd do a pretty good job. But yeah, good fella and very well known throughout Australia.
Yeah, for sure. Now, Dean, I do have a couple of interesting stories. One is we have Russian President Vladimir Putin. He's just hosted the International Atomic Energy Agency head, Rafael Grossi, in the resort city of Sochi on Wednesday. Now, talks focused on the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant in Ukraine, which is actually the largest nuclear power plant in the whole of Europe. Now, there was also discussion on global issues related to nuclear energy, but Putin said that we not only use but actively promote nuclear energy and consider it an environmentally friendly form of energy. We do everything to improve the safety of nuclear facilities. Now, he noted that Russia recently deployed its first floating nuclear power plant. Yes, they can float in the sea and in a quite a safe environment. And that's in the country's north, of course, out in the sea. Now, Atomic Energy Agency head Rafael Grossi did make quite a serious warning. He said an accident, inverted commas, accident, at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant remains a live possibility. And he's very, very straightforward there. When asked about this situation, whether he'd warned Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky about the potential consequences of launching the attack on the plant, Grossi replied that he remains in touch with all the parties in the conflict, saying, "I think everybody is aware of what is at stake here. My function here is to continuously draw the attention of everyone about what is at risk. In a war situation, the unexpected may happen," he said. "I can assure you that I'm very clear when I speak to everybody about this, so I'm confident that they are hearing us." Now, I'm sure everyone knows the situation, but some people have very malicious intentions, of course. So we know what happened with the Crimean Bridge, don't we, Dean?
Oh, yes. I'm seeing a red flag about a possible false flag. And I love the Russians. They've got some terrific intelligence. And there they were heading off a potential, you know, false flag from Germany to grow up, to blow up, as you said, that Crimean Bridge. And I would suggest if Russia is saying this now, they've probably got some information that could suggest somebody intended to do that and blame it, of course, on Putin.
Yeah, well, I can see all sorts of scenarios. I think it's a very dangerous situation because the West would love some sort of a crisis like this and blame it on Putin.
Yep.
Obviously, Putin's very aware of these possibilities and they'll do everything they can within their control. But it's very difficult in a war zone to stop some sort of a so-called accident. So watch this space. It is concerning for the entire world. Now, I'm not overly concerned about the nuclear fallout, as some people are. It would be serious, and surely some people would get caught in the fallout, but I think it would be exaggerated to all extremes by the Western media to terrify the living daylights out of us. Now, sure, it will be dangerous. You don't want to get near dangerous doses of radiation, but I don't think it would be quite as serious as some make it out to be. Just like that plant in Japan, the Fukushima plant, not one person died of a radiation overdose, and yet the media was screaming about radiation toxicity. Not one person died of a radiation overdose. Thousands of people died of the tsunami, but not from the radiation.
It's funny. I wonder what they did. You know, all the Japanese export vehicles. I wonder what they did with all the vehicles that just got left around Fukushima. I don't know why I ask that, but I do often wonder. But, mate, yeah, when it comes to Fukushima, I would love to think that that has been vastly exaggerated, and the media loves to do that because fear sells papers, and doesn't it? And gets clicks. So, mate, we've got to do the news headlines. We'll be back. And I want to ask you about the time you met George Galloway as well on the other side of these news headlines. Here I'm with Jeremy Beck at TNT.
TNT Radio News.
Hi, everybody.
So many crazy news stories going on right now.
Now, the news. Go.
Matt Boylan here with your TNT headlines. There's been a significant escalation in the Middle East where three people aboard a commercial cargo ship have been killed in a Houthi missile strike. US Republican Nikki Haley's officially pulled out of the race for the White House, paving the path for a rematch between Donald Trump and Joe Biden in November. And angry farmers have clashed with riot police in Poland's capital of Warsaw as they push back against the government's ludicrous green policies.
On air and on the app.
I listen on the app.
Stay up to date around the clock.
I listen, therefore I know.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And I am back with Jeremy Beck, a man who not only has met historically George Galloway, but has been aware of him and seen his transition from somebody who was typically, I do believe Jeremy said, a bit of a lefty to the guy that we now find is awakening, if you will.
Yes, for sure. I think he's awakening to some extent, although he did fall for the whole COVID scamdemic. In fact, he was arguing for the lockdowns to be very hard. I think it was genuine. I think he's generally fearful of COVID, but he seems to really get under the skin of the establishment. Rishi Sunak was inspired to give a speech to say that he's a threat to democracy. Well, hang on, people voted for him. I did get to meet George Galloway briefly at a political meeting, you know, shook his hand, said hello, said a few words, but I've been following him for many years. And just out of interest in general with many British politicians, including Jeremy Corbyn and people who, Piers Corbyn, Jeremy Corbyn's brother, who have somewhat upset the establishment. I don't agree with them on some issues. Certainly George Galloway, I don't agree with many things he says, but I think he is a genuine old lefty who is against the rotten establishment, against the military-industrial complex. And good on him for doing that. Now, 9/11 is another issue that he is starting to wake up on. And I know that he did have that discussion with Richard Gage, which is a good sign because Richard Gage opens everyone's eyes up to what really happened on 9/11.
He does. I think we need to ask a stack of questions, and I'd love to live to see the day where we see a proper inquiry into that and those who are really behind it being punished. Mate, something that I thought was especially funny was Labour was the one that really had the most to lose. They're the ones expected to do well at the UK general election. They're the ones that had a 44% swing against them. But here's Rishi Sunak on the other side of politics, absolutely cacking his dacks, if you want to use that term. It proves that they're really one group and that group is suffering and losing the people like this. So the duopoly is actually worried as a whole.
They are. And in a way, the duopoly is just a uni party. And it's the same in the UK, same in Australia. The mainstream parties, you look at the major policies, they're pretty similar. They have a bit of a political theatre there, but not much changes. And you see that, and this is related to my next story, in terms of agricultural policy or in terms of climate change policy. And this is why you have the farmers are out just completely outraged because their livelihoods are at stake. Our food security is at stake. Now, the latest is that a major protest in Poland. Poland's actually seen its most violent protest by farmers and supporters yet. And this is in the country's capital, Warsaw. Some of the participants, they threw stones at police. They tried to push through barriers around Parliament. By and large, though, most of the protesters were peaceful. But Dean, the response from the police was brutal. From the footage that I've seen, quite horrific. It reminded me of what happened to the truckers in Canada. The full-on suits that the police have and the helmets that they have and the batons, and any protester who dares step out of line, they belt them with the batons and push them down to the ground, and you see people screaming on the ground with the police on top of them. So it was quite horrific to watch, Dean, with these police really taking the heavy hand against the farmers, who by and large were peaceful. I'm sure there's a few agent provocateurs in there, but the police did react with pepper spray, tear gas, stun grenades. It was quite a thing to watch there. Interior Minister Marcin Kierwiński said that 23 provocateurs were detained on Wednesday. And according to Warsaw Police, a total of 13 officers were injured, including one police officer who suffered a serious head trauma. Now, around 30,000 people took part in the protest, according to the City Hall spokeswoman, and quite a sizable event, really, Dean. I wonder how much the mainstream media will report on it. I've seen a few reports, but by and large, the mainstream media don't really want to cover the farmers' grievances, because the grievances are real problems, such as they're dealing with this EU Green Deal, which is just destroying agriculture, Dean.
I love it when the people pile on, and now all credit to the farmers, and especially going back to the German ones, who I believe, you know, kicked this whole thing off. But, mate, you mentioned Canada and, you know, Justin Trudeau. I think they had it far worse over there than probably we even had it here in Australia. And him and his actions during COVID recently found to be illegitimate, and there he is still doubling down. So, mate, all of these global puppets, whether they be, you know, in Europe, whether they be in Canada or here in Australia, mate, they're not done, are they? They're just getting started. But the people, of course, are ramping it up. And when you see, you know, well, I think you said 30,000 people get out there en masse, they do realise how much power they have when they act as a group, and the politicians will literally be running. We had George Galloway, in response to George Galloway, we had Rishi Sunak saying that his fellow politicians wouldn't be able to sleep well at night and, you know, were concerned about their own safety. Well, you wouldn't have a problem if you did the right thing by the people, would you?
Exactly right. And we are the many, they are the few, the globalists are the few. They think that they can rule over us, but an awakened mass is really a major force to be reckoned with. So I'm actually cautiously optimistic for the future, Dean. It's going to be a very bumpy ride, of course, along the way.
Well, mate, don't mess with the farmers, because the top end of town, they need to eat too. So they'll have to be a little bit careful. Mate, I do appreciate you, Jeremy Beck, very, very much. And we'll talk again in the future.
Yep, will do. Thanks, Dean. Okay.
Everybody stick around, especially you people over in the UK, some of whom I had to just translate what cacking your deck means. It means pooing your pants. But by the way, I explained that, I think, to Holly in the online chat. Paul McGowan is going to be coming up next, and he's had a lot of people in the mainstream media cacking their dacks, because he's a man who doesn't mince his words and he says what he thinks, and he'll be doing that right here at TNT after this.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
You have to love New York Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik. She's the one who tore into the presidents of Harvard, MIT, and UPenn for not battling anti-Semitism on campus. And last week, she had Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin sitting in that chair. He's the one who went AWOL without telling anybody that he was in the hospital. Watch.
Let me ask you this. What disciplinary action would a junior service member face if he or she failed to properly notify their chain of command and failed to report for duty?
If a service member was in a hospital, I think the chain of command would be concerned about why they were in a hospital and make sure that they're doing the right things to take care of them and their families.
But don't you think it's their responsibility to notify their commanding officer?
I think
the answer is yes.
Possible, yes.
It is unacceptable, and you have admitted as such that there was a breakdown in communication with the President of the United States.
And then she pointed out this dangerous inconsistency in his testimony.
You said there was never a break in command and control, but yet the President of the United States was not aware that you were outside of the chain of the command.
Look, it's obvious Lloyd Austin should not be Defense Secretary anymore. At the very least, he should have suffered some consequences, right? Nothing, not a thing. If he were Donald Trump's Defense Secretary, he'd be long gone. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg. Catch my show Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on TNT.
Sometimes a car comes along that changes everything, with innovations never thought possible and features that make you wonder, how did people survive without this? This is that time, and this is that car. This is the world's first VWB. Equipped with transparent doors to eliminate reasonable suspicion, whatever that means. A 10-2 steering wheel that keeps hands visible at all times. We remove the glove box so there's no confusion about what the driver is reaching for. With a touch of a button, the ultrasonic biometric scanner displays the license and registration of the driver to ensure contactless exchange of information. With no trunk, nothing can be concealed, so therefore, there is nothing to search and seize. To ensure you'll never be mistaken for breaking the speed limit, we've installed limited edition airless tires. And we removed the engine because, honestly, why risk it? DWB, the first vehicle of its kind, where the safety feature is the car itself.
I have a feeling these are the look like the people involved in the armed robbery. I'm approaching the vehicle. Request backup. The driver matches the description. Because of a wide-set nose.
Dean Mackin on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. As you would know, TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what the others only say they do. We're a live TV and radio broadcaster that tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do here at TNT, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and night. In the 2.5 years that we've been around, we've become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's critical time, and now we must continue to call out the misinformation and the propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful, and boy, don't they have some powerful sponsors. So we're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the globe to get onto the tntradio.live website. And if you can make a small donation while we continue to work to find the right sponsors so we can continue our important work here at TNT, that would be absolutely phenomenal. Next guest, one you will all know very well, and I look forward to chatting with always, Paul McGowan. He's an artist, a social commentator. He's also a man who's been cancelled many times in the mainstream media, addressing emotive issues. His work often provokes strong reactions. He studied art at Falmouth and Winchester and Bath School of Art, and a terrific fella. He has no filter. He says what he thinks, and he's almost always right. I love him. Paul McGowan, how are you, mate?
Good morning, TNT. Great to be back, Dean. It's been a hell of a week in Blighty. It's been absolutely crazy politically. And it's been a very revealing week. I mean, we started off with George Galloway, who's a totally controversial anti-establishment figure. How they didn't know he was going to get in, I do not know. I knew he would get in. I thought he was a shoo-in.
Yep.
Rishi Sunak's burst a bubble over it. And the whole of establishment is quaking. Now, whether if you like him or not, George, he is very charismatic. And he's absolutely, I think that's his fifth election he's won, all in different areas. I don't think he manages to hold his seats, but he gets in them.
Yep.
But George did a very clever thing for his Workers' Party of Great Britain he started. He ran in Rochdale, which is obviously famous for grooming gangs now more than anything else. He ran two campaigns. He ran a campaign for Whitey, and basically that was all about grooming gangs, corruption in the council, a heavily political campaign. It was a good campaign, a solid campaign. He ran all the issues that people want. But in the Islamic community of Rochdale, which is huge, which is basically centered around the train station. So if you go to Rochdale and get off the train, you'd think you was in Islam, an Islamic country. But, you know, you go past that and you get back to England, you know. But he ran his campaign for the Muslims solely about Gaza. And it worked. And fair play to him, you know, love him or hate him, he knows how to win an election. And the Tories do not know how to win an election. They came absolutely nowhere. There was problems. There's some death threats and things like that over the election for other candidates. But, you know, this seems to be modern world, doesn't it? Especially in the West. So George is controversial. One of the things that I hate about him, during the lockdown, George didn't just want a lockdown. He wanted a full Chinese-style military lockdown with people sealed into their homes. I mean, he went crackers over that. So some people, obviously, in Rochdale don't mind about his authoritarianism. It can be quite extreme, but it wouldn't work with me. I'd have been breaking out my house all the time. But this sponsored a real pushback from the Tories. They actually got the podium out. Now, they never get the podium out front of Downing Street, and they hardly ever get it out. It's a real rarity. And Rishi Sunak done a speech about extremism. Now, what was weird about this speech was it was about Islamic extremism and how it's got to be stamped out. But he said Islamic extremism and far right exactly the same amount of times. But we literally have virtually no far right problem in this country. I mean, we're on our highest alert now since 9/11. And the funny thing is about that is that's for Islamic extremism. That's its sole. That's why we're on it. But, you know, so this far right narrative, they're arresting people in England for doing really minor things, just to get it on the rest, to just bump up the numbers of far right stuff. But you know, the whole Rishi Sunak thing and the way he shook the establishment is absolutely how they reacted is quite amazing. Like Rishi Sunak done a speech in Parliament, and I found it absolutely so revealing, because what he did was he said who the modern Conservative Party represent in Britain, you know? And who did he mention? He mentioned every single ethnic group, but who didn't he mention? He didn't mention the English, the Scottish, the Welsh, the huge Irish communities that live in England. He mentioned no Anglo-Saxons, no Christians, every single one else. So they represent everyone else, he basically said, apart from the majority of the people that live here. And this is what's pissing people off, you know, and the politics. And the thing is about that is then they've announced a statue for Islamic war heroes, a war memorial, right? Wow. Now, this is off the back. This is off the back. It's got Khan's given it its backing. This is off the back of all these protests where they've been climbing on our war memorials. And you've got to remember, this is about Palestine. And who did Palestine side with originally? Where did the Grand Mufti of Palestine spend the war? He spent the war in Berlin, putting out on the radio anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic propaganda for Nazi Germany. So people in Britain, everyone knows this, you know, because in Britain, everyone lost somebody during that war. It could be a great uncle, great grandfather. Everyone lost somebody, you know. So now we've got this memorial being put up. Now, this memorial is going to be really tricky, because there's always going to be Islamic extremist marches in the UK now, because so we've got such a large part of our population. Now, if they climb on our war memorials, they're not their own. That's going to be really difficult, you know. So I don't know how this is going to pan out, but that's the latest strategy from the establishment to calm down the situation. And all it's done is flared things up even more, you know. So let me tell you about this, right? We had a guy, right, Samuel Melia. He was jailed for putting stickers on lampposts, right? Now, I just breezed over this story. And I'm not saying he's a great guy or anything like that, but I found copies of the stickers that he put up. Now, I want to tell you, and this is what he was arrested for, even though the judge later said the stickers were legal, right? But he was arrested for these originally. I'm going to read you what the stickers said. Ready? For the shock, horror. White Lives Matter, right?
Oh, how dare he?
How dare he? How dare he? It's one of the stickers said, which is true because it's an ONS sticker, it's an ONS figure. And the current rates of projection of migration in the UK by 2066, the native-born population will be the minority in their country. That's a true figure. That was one of the things he was arrested for. Another one was reject white guilt. Reject white. Yeah. I mean, how can you arrest somebody over those things? But later, because they need to get these stats up, they need to get these far right stats up. They went to his house, searched his house, and the police have all done all this to me before. Remember, I've been arrested so many times, unbelievable. No charges, never had any charges. Remember, my hands like this because of the police, you know. So, so they went to his house and they found some books, a picture of Hitler. He was probably, you know, not the best of people, but this is still thought crimes. This is still made up, because you can go to my bookcase and there's so many books on the Second World War that you could literally, they've all got pictures of Hitler in them. You can literally say, do the same thing. We found pictures of Hitler in his house. So also the judge said he was an upstanding member of the community. His wife is pregnant, having a baby, and he jailed him for 2 years.
Wow.
2 years. And it started off by putting stickers. Now, I have loads of fans that I used to make memes a long time ago, and they were quite punchy memes, but they were all satirically based, you know. There's nothing evil about any of them. But that was in 2015. Now, those things, you can't say those things that were you know, in England, you can't say those things in England anymore. So I have people constantly all the time, they send me pictures of it, that print out my old memes and they stick them on lampposts. They send me pictures of them like that. And I'm like, I could be now be arrested again for making those memes and, you know, other people sticking them on lampposts. Where does it end? So we're in total chaos here, you know, and I just cannot see a way around this situation in Britain now, because the establishment, they want us to become the minority. They push it. They're flooding this country. Nobody can stop it. But yet Denmark can, France can. Every time they get something, they arrest somebody as an extremist. In France the other day, they arrested an extremist. No trial, no nothing. Got him in his flat, put him on a plane and flew him to Tunisia. Right, straight away, no, nothing. Do you know what his comment was? What? This would never happen in Britain. That's what he said.
Yeah. Mate, it's horrific.
Also, Denmark are doing exactly the same. Anyone, like, but in Britain, we've got lefty lawyers and we've got a system put in place by Tony Blair and we can't do anything because the Labour Party want as many people. And remember, the establishment is more, even though we've got a uni party, in Britain, you know, I think most of the West have. You get your politicians in there. There's a few good ones in each batch. And I would even go to say there's probably a few good ones on either side of the aisle that don't agree with everything. But those good politicians, when they say anything, immediately they're in trouble. They're in trouble. But Rishi Sunak, basically, when he did his podium speech, he sounded like Lee Anderson from the week before, who we removed the whip from. He basically said everything Lee Anderson said because he knew that the country were livid. And so they passed a law. They said they're going to stop these Islamist marches, right? The next day, there was another Islamist march in London. There's another one after that, and they haven't done nothing. I watched the police stand there, and watch a Jewish man threatened by a whole bunch of people saying they're going to beat him up. And the police did nothing. They threatened him. And the police did nothing. But also the police did nothing. Well, going back to Samuel Melia, a few weeks before, on video, it's everywhere, you find it all over the internet. In London, they interviewed a Muslim gentleman that was posting, protesting for Palestine. He called Hitler a hero and said he knew how to handle the Jews. Nothing happened to him. He walked scot-free. Nothing. And the same judge that jailed Samuel Melia, also the week before, I do believe, let off three people that were arrested for doing flying anti-Jewish slogans. And if you look on the marches and you read the signs they're carrying them on them, they are like 50 times worse than Samuel Melia's stickers that you put on lampposts. They're absolutely awful. And nobody gets arrested. And on these marches, they say, oh, there's a load of good people. The majority of people are good on these marches. Well, if the majority of people are good on these marches, get the ones that are not good, they're not extremists, refuse to march with them. Because they've got the numbers, they've got the volume, but they don't. And this is what annoys me. We've seen the same footage of these marches on the telly all the time, you know, on videos or anywhere. They're always being pinged around all over the place. You can look at those videos, and the police don't seem to know who they are, but the public can look at those videos and say, oh, that was the guy in the week's, wearing the same outfit, same mask, how he was in the other week's video. The public can see the people at the front of these marches that are causing all the problem. The public see them, the government see them, the police see them, but the reality is, they don't arrest them. They don't. I think the other day they arrested 12 on a huge march, and I can guarantee you they'll all be let off.
Yeah, mate. Well, you can.
One of them had a White Lives Matter T-shirt.
You can see exactly where it's going. Yeah, it's completely predictable.
It's got to the point where it's so frustrating.
I love what you said about, you know, the uni party or the duopoly, and it was never so apparent after the Rochdale by-election and George Galloway getting in. I mean, Labor had the most to, you know, here we go, coming up to a general election. Labor's expected to win, and there's Sunak on the other side. His party wasn't expected to win. Labor had a 44% swing against them, and there's Rishi Sunak outraged by this guy. So when the duopoly can't contend with an individual who can outthink them, they really start to panic because they don't know what George Galloway's capable of or going to say next.
Right. He's a very charismatic man, you know. And, all people like him, well, so I mean, I've never met George personally, but I know loads of people that have, and they say you can't help but like him. You know, he's a very likable character. I think he's an extremist, got loads of extremist views, but I think the Tories have got really extremist views in the other direction, you know, because the Tories are a bunch of commies, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, they're the conservative socialists, if you like, because conservative understands our party, and that's why we're all leaving.
And mate, this is the problem. This is why you have the duopoly, because you can be a lefty, but because you are to the right of these other people that are sliding ever more off to the left, it is only by comparison that they appear to be conservative. And you have a look at how far left of center they are to our old school views going back 40, 50, 60 years ago. And then you wake up to it, and they do it in increments, just as Jordan Peterson explained how we got to where we are now from where we were 40 or 50 years ago. Mate, we've run out of time. Paul McGowan, I think you're terrific. Thank you for coming on the program, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Dean. Thank you, TNT. Thank you.
Good on you. So it's Sonia Poulton coming up next, so don't go anywhere. Fasten your seatbelts. My name's Dean Mackin, and I'll catch you all tomorrow.